I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. David Gooderson joins me now. The best-selling author is in town as part of the Cherry Smith Jewish Community Center of Greater Vancouver Jewish Book Festival. He's also just published his latest novel, Ed King. It's described as a story of destiny, desire, and destruction, reimagining Sophocles' Oedipus Rex. We'll get him to tell us more about this book. Mr. Gooderson is the author of the novels East of the Mountains, The Other, Our Lady of the Forest, and Snow Falling on Cedars, which won the Penn Faulkner Award. He's also written a short story collection, The Country Ahead of Us, The Country Behind, and Family Matters, Why Homeschooling Makes Sense. He lives in Washington State, where Ed King is set. It's published by Knopf. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, David Gooderson. Good morning, Mr. Gooderson.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
You bet.
Let's get into what Ed King is about. If we've read Oedipus Rex, do we know what happens in your book?
Not quite. Certainly there are some similarities, and I think the first thing to note about Sophocles' play Oedipus Rex is that it's only one iteration of many. That is, this is a story that's told all over the world in many, many different cultures, and it takes many, many different forms. The basic conventions of the story are well known. That is, a young man kills his father and marries his mother. But after that, the elements of the story are quite diverse around the world.
Now, how did you come about to writing a novel using sort of that premise?
Well, it'd be easy, I think, for people to assume that I had a primary interest in incest and patricide, but in fact there's another major element of the story that interested me, and that's this idea that these things happened unknowingly, unwittingly. The person who committed these acts doesn't know that he's doing it. He's blind to himself, blind to the fundamental facts of his existence, and that interested me more than anything else. This idea that we can blunder through life, thinking we know who we are, thinking we know what our lives are about. And in the case of Oedipus, and in the case of my character, Ed King, doing all that with great self-assurance and a very healthy ego, all the while utterly blind to central facts.
Now, Walter, he's a character in the book. He's an actuary, and he's playing life with a nanny, is my understanding. She gets pregnant. Do you play life, by the way?
I have played the game many, many years ago. Not for some time, but Walter Cousins, the novel opens with this in 1962 in Seattle with a man named Walter Cousins whose wife has been hospitalized. And so they hire an au pair, a girl from England, and he ends up sleeping with her and getting her pregnant. That child gets left on a doorstep in Portland, Oregon, and that child grows up to be Ed King.
And now he becomes, successful in the internet business, right?
Yeah, Ed has a real inclination towards math and computer science, and excels as a college student. And then he is the founder and CEO of a search company, something like Google. His company is called Pythia, and this company grows to on the scale of something like Microsoft or Google, and it's international in scope. And Ed is a tech mogul, an iconic figure like a Steve Jobs, a sort of tech celebrity with influence and fame worldwide.
The you live in Washington State. The book is set there. The technological boom that happened over the last 20, 30 years in your part of the world, in this part of the world, I guess, that's transformed the area much like, I guess, the war experience did in the 40s, didn't it?
Yes. Well, one of the interesting things about this this part of the world is that a European settlement didn't happen until about a little over 150 years ago, and that's a pretty concentrated period of time to go from colonialism, settlements, resource extraction, heavy industry, and then into high tech. The pace of change, the sort of accelerated, high speed, you know, rapid alteration of every aspect of our physical and cultural landscape is astounding. And one of the things that interests me, and it's one of the reasons that so many of my books are set in this part of the world, that sort of compression, historical compression, is really fascinating and rare.
And have you set any of your other novels outside of this area?
For the most part, in all five novels, you know, with the exception of some pieces here and there that are in Italy, for example, in other parts of in Europe, I have some World War II battles in the Pacific, in Snow Falling on Cedar, some scenes in Italy, in East of the Mountains. But by and large and primarily, my novels are set in the Pacific Northwest.
You grew up in this part of the world?
Yes, I was born in Seattle, and I've lived in the Pacific Northwest, you know, my entire life.
I've read a couple of interviews that you've done internationally with the, I guess there were papers in Europe. They ask you about how different the Pacific Northwest is from the rest of America. There's great similarity, not just because of climate, I guess, but to where we are today in Vancouver, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the border is sort of an abstraction, a political abstraction, but the primary sort of bioregional facts extend obviously across the border and all the way up to southeast Alaska and down to northern California. And not only do we share a similar climate pattern and ecological realities, but even a kind of cultural reality. I think we look towards the Pacific. We're certainly not as Eurocentric as the American East Coast is. Our orientation is toward the Pacific Rim, and we are definitely part of it culturally.
How far do you live from Vancouver?
Well, I'm in the Seattle area. I live on a small island in Puget Sound, about a half hour from Seattle by ferry.
Yeah, and so did you drive up here, or how did you get here?
Yeah, I drove.
Yeah. Do you come up here often?
I'd say once or twice a year for one reason or another, yeah. I'd love to visit Vancouver.
Yeah. You're in town, as I mentioned off the top, for the Jewish Book Festival. I happen to know from reading up on you that you are Jewish, but they made one interview you did made a point of saying that heretofore you've been reticent to embrace it. Your books, they haven't had much of a Jewish element to them. This one does, I guess. The Kings, who adopt the baby, they're Jewish, right?
That's right. Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, Ed is left on a doorstep. He ends up in a sort of orphanage for a bit. He's ultimately adopted by a very liberal Jewish couple. In most respects, essentially secular, liberal humanists with only the smallest sort of cultural connection to Judaism, and certainly not much of a spiritual connection to it. And he's raised in that sort of environment.
Is that similar to your family?
Yeah, I was raised in similar circumstances. I mean, the actual, I guess, theological content of Judaism was really blurry and in the background as I grew up. I think I grew up in an atmosphere of agnosticism, even atheism, you know, liberal humanism, contemporary worldview, and Judaism was very much off to the side.
Yeah, is the King family, I mean, is that similar to the sort of family that you grew up with, or that you have now? I understand that you and your wife, you've also adopted, right?
Well, starting with the family that I grew up in, no. I think Ed's parents, Dan and Alice King, are very indulgent, and I think they spoil their two sons. It's that kind of me generation, doting on the child. And I didn't grow up with that. And we certainly haven't raised our kids that way. So not much of a one-to-one correspondence, and not much of a one-to-one correspondence really between between the novel Ed King and my own life, very much an imagined world, imagined people.
Well, what some people have been talking about with regards to this book, Ed King, is the idea of destiny, of fate, and that which happens to Ed. It's described as sort of the American story. Did you set out to say something about contemporary America, or sort of the legend, the myth that is America?
Well, starting with you raised the theme of fate or destiny. In the play that Sophocles wrote, Oedipus Rex, fate is largely at play and very much at the center of things, and fate is in the hands of the gods. I mean, the Greeks had this, you know, panoply of gods, and they were, in many ways, they had many human qualities. They were malicious, they were mischievous, they had hot tempers, they weren't always fair, they weren't always just, and these were the agents of human fate for the ancient Greeks, and responsible for our destinies. They're responsible for the destiny of Oedipus. Now, we don't have that in our own time. Contemporary people not only don't have the gods, many don't even have God, mm-hmm. and they believe that everything that happens as a result of simply chance or accident. And so I didn't have the gods to work with. Fate, if it was going to operate in the novel, had to come from another source altogether. But the other part of your question, you know, the degree to which this is an American story and a contemporary American story, by all means, because Oedipus Rex, the Greek character, is somebody who's driven by his hubris or arrogance and his pride, egotism, his narcissism, and by his blindness. And I really do think that, you know, post-World War II, for the past 60 years or so of American history, that we have been subject to the same, and, you know, the same forces have been operating in our national character. It's one of the reasons I wanted to tell this story, because I did think it was pertinent to our American moment.
And you take us in the book, apparently, to years in the future, right?
Yeah, the novel opens in 1962 and concludes in the year 2017.
Yeah, is the world different that we see in 2017 than it is today?
I think, you know, part of the irony was how quickly things moved forward, particularly in the tech world, that while I was working on this book, 2008, 2009, 2010, I was envisioning things that I thought maybe wouldn't happen until 2017, but they are things that are already happening. For example, there's a new Apple iPhone that has a personal assistant you can speak to. Her name is Siri. And I had invented something of the same, but really didn't have it at its advent until the year 2017. So things are moving at a fast clip.
Another review that of the book that I read talked about your previous novels and sort of listed these things that we should expect from your books, and how this book is somewhat different from those. Did you deliberately set out to write a different sort of book that we expect from you?
Well, this book is definitely a departure in terms of tone. This book is a tragic comedy. This book is social satire. This book shoots some poisoned arrows in the direction of American society. And that's not something you saw in the prior four novels. So I think people who read my earlier work, who opened this new book, Ed King, will note very quickly this difference in tone. On the other hand, I do think they'll recognize that ultimately it's by the same author, in the sense that it explores a moral condition or a moral question. I don't set out to provide, you know, I don't presume to have moral answers, and I think those kinds of books are actually sort of dangerous. But I do think that the novel can operate or function in the moral realm by asking moral questions and creating circumstances with moral questions at their heart for contemplation by readers. And that was true of the earlier four novels, and it's true of Ed King as well.
Does the success, the first book was Snowfall on Cedars, that was a big hit critically and commercially. It was made into a movie. Does that weigh heavy on you as a writer? I mean, when you're writing subsequent works?
Well, Snowfall on Cedars came out in 1994. It was my third book. It was my first novel. And as you say, you know, it was a very successful book. I mean, it sold millions of copies worldwide. It was made into a film. It won awards and so on. And, you know, none of the books I've written since then have had those kinds of sales or that kind of impact. But I think it'd be very unrealistic for any writer to hope to repeat that sort of thing. And if it happens early in your career, you can either sort of wear it as a kind of millstone around your neck and bemoan the fact that you're not, you know, repeating that same sort of success over and over, or you can just simply be happy that, you know, that happened to you and you were quite fortunate, and be glad that for the gift of your career and that you're able to go on and write really what you want to write in the aftermath of a first novel like Snowfalling on Cedars. And that's precisely how I feel. I don't expect any of the succeeding books to have that kind of impact or that kind of success, but I'm very, very grateful to have had that experience early in my career.
Now, you know your novels better than anyone. Do you think you're a better writer today than you were when, I guess, in the early 90s when you wrote the first book?
Absolutely. I think it's possible for a writer to get better from book to book, and that you should be getting better from book to book. You're gaining experience. It's not as if you're an athlete where physical decline means deterioration. You can build on the skills that you acquire from book to book. You can reflect on what went right, what went wrong in each book. And there should be a greater degree of technical sophistication from effort to effort, and you can bring to bear what you learned on book number four to book number five, etc. And so I always feel that what I'm working on now is the most accomplished. But, yes, I mean, I know my work better than anyone, but the other side of that is, as the author, you can be so close to your own work that in many ways you're blind to it, and you maybe lose your objectivity and can't see it for what it is. So I like to believe that I'm getting better from book to book, and I think I am. I think there's a higher degree of technical proficiency just in terms of sort of sheer performance. But that's my subjective take on what's going on in my career.
I haven't seen the movie Snowfalling on Cedars. Is it true to the book? Were you happy about how the process went from in terms of adapting it to the screen?
Well, I was very happy with the process, and I didn't ask the director to be true to the book. I think what the director needed to do, and what any film director needs to do, is have his or her own vision and, you know, make sure that he's in charge, that it's his sort of creative project, and not feel sort of harnessed to the author and harnessed to the book. This is a different medium. It's on the screen. It's a different way of telling a story. It must, by definition, be different from the novel. I mean, what I did was put prose on the page. What the director of the film did was put images on a screen. So he's got to make it his own. And I respect that, and I wanted to be supportive of what he was doing. He drew me into the process. I was happily involved in the making of the film in different regards. And, in fact, much of it was filmed here in Vancouver, at studios here in Vancouver, and then also at sites in the interior of British Columbia, primarily in the town of Greenwood. So we spent a lot of time up here.
Mm, yeah. The images that you saw on screen in that movie, did they look like the ones that you saw in your mind's eye when you were writing the novel?
Well, one of my roles with regard to the film was to participate in the location scouting. So with the producer and the director, the cinematographer, and some other people, we traveled, and we would go to different places that, you know, were potentially good. And I was able to chime in with my two bits on whether this, you know, these particular scenes, these particular places, landscapes, were consistent with my vision of the story. So I had a hand in the location scouting, and as a result, I think the film does look very much like, you know, what's described in the prose of the novel.
Growing up, did you always want to be a writer?
No. I think I was one of those kids growing up who really had no strong feeling one way or the other about a career path or about work. Certainly, like all kids, I went through periods of dreaming or fantasizing about doing this or doing that, but nothing serious, nothing about which to which I felt dedicated. And it wasn't until I was in my early 20s that I discovered creative writing and found that I really enjoyed doing it. And I think that's what really keeps me going, and I think keeps any writer going, is that when you sit down in that room by yourself for hours at a time, that you're taking a real delight, a real pleasure in the creative act of burrowing down inside the story and living inside the world of the story, and the complexity of technical decisions, trying to make everything work. There's a real aesthetic satisfaction that comes with that. It's the daily act itself that keeps me going as a writer.
And do you write every day?
I do.
Even now when you're on tour like this?
When I'm away, I generally bring pages with me to read through and reflect on and revise, as opposed to composing new pages. But at home, every day, and the first thing I do in the morning is get up and go to work. Morning is a good time for me.
Yeah, and do you do that on a computer, or do you do that on pen and paper? Or?
I use both. You know, there's kind of a loop or a cycle. I'll sit down with a pen and write sentences, and the page will start to look pretty messy, and I can't really work it anymore, so I'll transfer it to word processing and print that out, and then, you know, sit down with that printout page and scribble on it. And so I'm sort of making a loop that passes through cursive to word processing to making scribble pencil revisions.
The Guardian selected, a sex scene from Ed King. And described it as, I guess they have this thing, or the worst sex scene in novels and the sort, and they picked a scene from your book as a nominee for worst sex scene in a novel. What do you make of that? Is it
so
easy?
So this is an award that's given annually by something called the Literary Review.
Yeah.
And this has been going on for a number of years now. And every year they shortlist, I think, a dozen writers and ultimately select one. And I've been shortlisted this year along with Stephen King and Haruki Murakami. The award's been won in the past by, say, Norman Mailer,
yeah.
Sebastian Falks, I believe. John Updike has a lifetime award. my feeling about it is, you know, it's all in good fun. I'm in very good company, and it's not something that I'm going to, you know, let myself feel horribly upset about or feel as insulting. You know, this is just something to bear with.
You know, I read the excerpt, and I guess because I know what sort of happens in the book, it I guess it's not meant to be, you know, comfortable, I suppose.
I think, you know, 2 points there. Nobody, I mean, most people shudder at the notion of incest,
yeah.
Particularly, you know, this idea of a young man having sex with his mother. I mean, people recoil. They're in part sort of attracted to it, can't turn away from it. On the other hand, they shudder with revulsion at the idea. So partly the problem is that, you know, inherent in that very scene is so much, you know, apprehension. But the other thing is, whenever you read a passage out of context, any of these shortlisted writers, you know, that have been excerpted in The Guardian,
yeah.
I think they all feel the same way. that once you remove an excerpt from the context of the larger novel, you no longer have point of view or tone or intent, you know, operating, and no one can really fairly judge the quality of the writing outside the context in which it appears. So these excerpts, I don't think, give anybody much of a sense of what's going on in the scenes at all.
David, it's been a pleasure talking today. You made me want to go out and buy the book and read it. I hope a lot of people listening do the same.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me.
You're very welcome. The book is called Ed King. It's published by Knopf. Its author, David Gooderson, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.